Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Emma O'Duher and Tom Breeze. So, you want to become a teacher with Rhian Wynne Griffiths. Hello and a warm welcome back to Season 8 of Emma and Tom Talk Teaching. Who'd have thought?
Who'd have thought indeed?
You'd have put up with me that long, but no, you're still here.
We're still here.
It's locked from the outside, listeners. Right, so we thought a really nice way to start off a new year when perhaps some of our listeners have come off a summer break feeling like they want to investigate something new, or perhaps you've just completed your degree at university trying to work out what you're going to do. We are going to resurrect our old favourite. It's the third time round on this particular ride, So You Want to Become a Teacher.
Yes, and we thought we needed some help with this episode, so we've strong-armed our colleague, not really, Rhian Wynne Griffiths. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you both?
We're not too bad. I'd like to say we're feeling super fresh because it's the start of a new season, but we're actually doing what we usually do and recording at the tail end of last academic year.
So yes, you walked past the studio at slightly the wrong time, Rhian. What is it that you do here at Cardiff Met?
Yes, I work as a senior lecturer on the PGC secondary course, Tom.
Lovely. And another new course, which we're going to be talking about later, which may be of interest to a small subsection of our listeners. So the big questions you're going to need to ask yourself, if you're sitting out there now thinking, teaching, this might be interesting. Perhaps you've just searched the word teaching in Apple Podcasts or similar and come across us. I suppose we need to set our stall out straight away and say, what is this teaching which we are going to be talking about now? So it is not any form of tutoring, private teaching, peripatetic teaching, going round people's houses and helping them with their GCSEs. This is the traditional school-based qualified teacher status, mainstream, everybody comes in your classroom type of teaching.
It is indeed. And I think the first thing to say about it is that it is a profession and it requires one to become a professional in the classroom. And also important to say that it's a lot more than what you perhaps remember seeing your teacher do when they were your teacher in the classroom. So, you know, aside from the obvious things that, again, you probably didn't see your teacher slaving away doing, which is things like planning lessons, really thinking carefully about planning lessons, teaching those lessons, evaluating whether they worked, whether they had an effect, reflecting on your practice, all of those things that you probably readily associated with being a teacher. There's so much more to it than that. Would you say so too, Rhian?
Totally agree, Emma. I'm thinking back to my early days as a teacher over 30 years ago now. And I think one of the things I felt strongly about, I taught in a Welsh medium school in South East Wales in my first post, is I wanted to make a difference to the, obviously to the lives of those young people, but I wanted to give them experiences outside of the classroom. So be that a residential course, or would it be public speaking, or would it be a book quiz, so that they learned probably through experiences. It wasn't just what we did within the classroom. And when I meet these ex-pupils now, those are their memories. Those are the things that they refer to. And they always refer to the fact, I've got pictures of this, or I've got medals because of this, or competing in the earth. And I think probably it's a worthwhile career then when you give that additional step in. Isn't it really? Yes, the planning is the scrupulous planning, the marking, the evaluating, the parents meeting, all of this, it's key to the role, isn't it really? But we're trying to create a rounded individual, aren't we really? And probably to give them experience then that they can then take on and flourish in their lives later on.
And I think if you want to go and listen to some more stuff in more detail, because we don't have time to kind of dig into loads of these things, some of our previous episodes, if you're new to us, we've got an interview with Emily McLeod, who says some really interesting stuff about teacher recruitment and what people think about teaching and their attitudes towards it. We've got Professor Trevor Mutton, who talks about teaching being a profession, all that sort of philosophy of what it is to learn to be a teacher. That's a really interesting episode. We've also got Professor David Egan. He was on quite recently talking about some of the issues, some of the difficulties we're having recruiting teachers. I think probably the two things that make me cringe myself inside out when I think about what I thought teaching was, given I've now become a teacher and now become a teacher educator, my top two are probably, firstly, I just thought my teacher walked into the room and started talking off the top of their head. And secondly, I had no idea how much you can actually hear of what people are saying in the classroom when you're standing at the front.
Very good. And we've got some bees in our bonnets about myths to do with teaching that we should probably bust just from the off, just in case you're out there thinking, ah, those who can't do teach, I'll kick us off with one. Which is a common one. I'm a secondary drama teacher. And, you know, you could cruelly say that all the failed actors become drama teachers. And that's absolutely not the case. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to really sort of completely sacrifice your art or your specialism or what you care and love about if you are going into the teaching profession. It might be that you're a career changer and actually you've got a lot of really good experience in your field that, you know, will make you really well placed. And actually maybe you did do and now you want to teach. So that's a myth I'd like to bust off the bat. Anyone got any others?
I think the other one is, you know, so many people have said to me over the years, well, you only work 9 till 3 and you've got such, you know, you're on holiday more than you're in school, really. And I think that's something that comes with the profession, isn't it, really? That people think of us probably as teachers as having a good deal, that we do actually walk out in our cars at 3 o'clock. But it's so much more than that, isn't it, really? Because if you give that extra mile, all that planning, all that marking, all those experiences you give the pupils happen after school quite often. And yes, you do have a long summer break, but you need it by then because you are absolutely exhausted and you need that new boost to come back and that injection to come back to give them again. And probably most of the summer term and the summer break is spent thinking about September and what you would then, you would read, you would look at new resources, you would revamp your schemes of work and you would think, okay, what am I going to do next year? Because I think as a teacher, you always need that injection and that refuel to give the next generation, the next class or the next A-level class something new. So you're always exploring and you're looking at different routes to make your own teaching more innovative and more creative too.
I think I'll say, I will agree with you, Emma, completely, that it's so good for the pupils to see that you actually do the thing that you're asking them to do. That's great. That's worth a huge amount. You know, that you, if they know, for example, in my case, that you go off and do concerts at the weekend or, you know, performing concerts, you're not asking them to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. However, the flip side of that is, here's my myth. I think there is a myth that you just have to be an absolute boffin of that subject, whatever it may be. I mean, this is a secondary thing, I suppose, thinking about subject specialism. As long as you know an enormous amount of that subject, you can just bolt on some sort of performing monkey teaching strategies and then you'll be a great teacher. I mean, actually, sometimes being a boffin can be a bit of a curse.
That's a very good one. And I suppose to bring it back into the primary phase, this is something that I'm stealing from a previous episode, a colleague, Shauna Davith, who talked about when you're thinking about being a primary teacher, you might be really into the idea that you're going to be encouraging them to play and to be very nurturing and caring. And, you know, essentially, it's going to be a bit of a babysitting gig that you've got when they sort of forget the significance in the primary phase of learning and progress and what it takes to understand how children learn, how to facilitate that learning, how to plan for it. So, you know, a point that Sean had made very, very clearly is a myth that if you're a primary teacher, because we can be stereotyped, can't we? You know, into if you're a primary teacher, you're very sort of maternal and nurturing. And I'd bust that myth straight away. But remember that, you know, even in the primary phase, even in what we call foundation learning here in Wales, there's a lot of very intricate and complex planning that goes in and expertise that comes in the classroom to ensure that pupils are making progress.
I think that's a great specific example of the fact that we, if you've just experienced being taught, or even if you watch it happening and you don't know what's going on, you can really get fooled. And I think the ultimate one of that is the early years, the way that they do things, the way it's so kind of child-led and it looks like play. I mean, I suppose it is play. It's so easy if you don't know what you're doing to lose sight of the amazing stuff that's going on below the surface there. And then you will sometimes get people who go, oh, yes, I'm going to be doing all this play. What fun. And it's almost better disguised, I think, in the early years, that clever stuff, than it is in any other age phase. I mean, how those people do that stuff is beyond me. And you know, I'm speaking as a confirmed secondary person. I could not do it.
And the last one I'd like to bring to the fore, and maybe you two could sort of help me with this, that brings us right up to date. You perhaps will have seen coverage in the media of kids that are wild, they're out of control post-COVID, they're not coming to school, they're feral, you know, you're effectively, if you're a teacher, you're just crowd control, and, you know, and that could be really off-putting for you know, people thinking about the profession who already have this fear that, you know, am I going to be able to get them to listen to me? Are they actually going to pay attention? And also depictions in the media of schools that are just like that. Adolescence springs to mind with kids jumping out of windows, etc. When actually there are some excellent schools out there working with newly qualified teachers, student teachers, who are really helping them to learn how to build really good relationships, positive relationships, work in challenging schools, in challenging areas for various different reasons, and the different approaches that one might take as a teacher to really help young people to engage, to be ready to learn. We had a really good episode with Kelly Bubbins last season, who's on the senior leadership team at Willows, who talks about how they developed the Willows Way and their sort of behaviour management and sort of school culture, really. So if you're really worried about that, seek out those really great examples. Do your reading around it, because you're certainly not going to be, you know, dropped in at the deep end and expected to fend for yourself.
I was going to ask you about this, Rian, actually, because I often feel a bit conflicted about this, because I think it's so important not to minimise that there are some real challenges with some pupils, and some teachers have a really rough time in school. And I always used to take the view that the whole behaviour thing was overblown. You know, I used to have some, you know, pretty dodgy stuff happen in my classes sometimes. But it wasn't a huge worry to me. I used to really like my Valleys teenagers that I used to teach. The naughty ones, I used to find loads and loads of fun. And then I asked myself the question, is that because, not to put too fine a point on it, I'm a man, I'm 6 feet tall, and I'm quite scary when crossed. So am I just being complacent?
I think that's a really interesting point, because when I go back again to my days as a student teacher, and I remember a couple of classes that I was asked to teach were Year 11 Set 5. And after my first week, I remember phoning my mother saying, I can't do this, because it was quite a daunting experience, 30 of them in a classroom throwing rugby balls and so forth. And then I thought, I don't want somebody to sort this out for me. I've got to sort this out for myself. And I think that's the complexity of thinking you're in there to try and engage, aren't you? You're in there to try and get them on board, and you're in there to try and make your lessons as appealing, as creative as possible, so that they come with you. And looking back over the 30 years of teaching, actually, I think that the children I enjoyed working with most were those probably who didn't jump in through the door thinking, yes, it's a Welsh lesson today. It was those probably who needed that reassurance, who needed that support, who needed that encouragement, because quite often they would say to me, you're the only person today who's actually congratulated me on anything, who's listened to me, who's asked me about my hobbies. Or quite often, and I shouldn't say this, boys quite often wouldn't want you to be in front of the whole class giving them great compliments and saying that was an excellent piece of coursework there about that drama. But then when you were sick, and I've got quite a word with you at the end, they would absolutely beam going out through the classroom. And I had happened to be last week, somebody came into Cardiff Met, who works now in a television company, and came in a different realm and said, my son now works in Putney, he is a doctor, But because of you, he's got a poem up on his wall about what it means to be Welsh in Wales. And I thought, oh, wow. And that actually made my day then. So I think we all need something, don't we? We all need that encouragement and we all need somebody to give us that additional boost. And probably those have got behavioural issues or are not concentrating or anxious. And there's always a reason. And I think it's trying to unpick the reason, isn't it?
And I think if we're moving gently towards a more of an advicey sort of stage of this episode, like we said at the start, everybody's got an opinion of teaching because they once sat in a classroom. And I think possibly if you do take the leap and become a teacher, one of the first things you might need to stop doing is, as they say, reading the bottom half of the internet, because all of those comments that you see on stories about education, they not only say some pretty disobliging things about teachers quite often, but they really vilify the kids as well. I mean, even those of us that work in secondary, and I know I'm aware we've got to be careful we don't go too secondary centric in this recording, but they're still children. They're still kids and they still respond to positivity. And I don't know what annoys me more, the idea that teaching can be reduced to a series of sort of performing monkey exercises that you just replicate, or the fact that kids just need to be sort of squished Victorian style. Because as you say, there's often a lot going on there. And I think I probably took things personally when I was new to teaching, when people misbehaved. I thought they were out to get me. And it wasn't until I spoke to their head of year and they told me what was going on that actually I took my metaphorical hat off the fact they were in my classroom in the first place.
So there we are. Don't let those myths put you off, fool you, or leave you underprepared. So we've got a nice segue here into, like, why would somebody want to do it? We've got some nice examples from, you've given a nice example there of people that have come up and spoken to you, you know, since leaving the profession. And I think we've probably all got those stories, haven't we? There's that old adage that teaching is the profession that makes all others possible. So perhaps the first stop on this tour of why you want to do teaching is that you might want to make a difference to young people and positively influence their lives, their future lives as people and as future workers. Would you agree with that?
I think you open the door, don't you, really? You give them the gateway to be able to succeed. And I don't think that, you know, examinations or results day is the, you know, the be all and end all at all. But nothing gave me more pleasure than actually seeing those who'd had additional support or additional mentoring because background was hard or that they were struggling. And then you see them with a certificate saying, I've actually succeeded. I've actually got now the route to go on. So that's one example, isn't it, really, that you actually do literally make a difference to their life because of the teaching and because of the support and because of the additional mentoring, you've given them probably the leeway to be able to succeed. And maybe they're the first in their generation to be able to go on to the next step. So you literally make a difference, don't you, really? But you also make a difference in the respect that you probably, no matter what your subject is, because if you go on to the senior management team within a school too, there are pathways out there within a school too. It doesn't stop just being a classroom teacher. You can have different routes too. And I think probably your doors open then when you see more about the background or you see about the hurdles, why they can't succeed. So giving them the support to go on a trip or supporting them financially, finding a way, be a bursary or whatever, to give them probably an experience to see within their capacity or where they live or what they've had to date that they can actually go on a trip overseas or that they can go on a residential course or they can perform in a concert that you can support them with fees for peripatetic lessons. So it's probably going over those hurdles so that they can succeed, that it's not just those who are privileged that have, you know, the gateway into education, that we actually prepare or give all the same opportunity.
Yeah, I think we've probably all, you very quickly build up a sort of a little bank of lovely stories, don't you? I mean, I think I brought one to the podcast, didn't I, a while ago, someone who I'd sent him a postcard home about his work in music, you know, and he ended up studying at the Welsh College of Music and Drama. Lovely. I suppose we have to make sure that we also think about the fact that, I mean, lots of people who will come through our doors to learn to be a teacher will be highly educated, successful, they'll have done well. And it's really important that they don't just think about the people, perhaps, that they're going to send to national youth groups or Oxbridge degrees and things like that. And I think when you're looking inwards on yourself, listening to this episode, you've got to sort of ask yourself, well, will I be just as happy, if not happier, about, you know, like Kelly Bubbins's, you know, pupil who got a job in a sports shop because he knew to wear a tie and smart shoes to his interview. Or I'm thinking about a boy, you know, he was on the autistic spectrum. He joined in year seven and he used to regularly have meltdowns and sort of roll around on the floor of the hall at break time because he just couldn't cope with it. And when he was in year 11, he had a speaking role in the school production. And that was an absolutely amazing moment, probably right up there with an Oxbridge degree or something like that. You know, it's ask yourself, I suppose, when you're teaching, whether all of those things motivate you equally, because, of course, we are looking for those personal qualities that you know, as we said at the start, this is mainstream education. You've got absolutely everybody. And what is a huge achievement for one person looks massively different from what is a big achievement for someone else.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then we come to, you know, why do it? You know, why is it a job, a role that is going to give you satisfaction, that's going to allow you to be continuously learning? You know, you might be thinking of a big career change, and it might be that because that's because you want to make a difference, or it might be that you want something a bit more stable. There is stability in teaching. Whether we like it or not, there is quite a lot of structure and a lot of systems. But for some, that can be really quite reassuring. But it's also a collaborative job. You know, you're inducted sort of into a community of teachers. You're teaching within a community. It's all about people. You get to collaborate. You're not often left alone to kind of come up with stuff by yourself. There's a lot of collaboration that goes on between members of staff. And there are a lot of other services that support schools too. So if you do have some of those fears, then remember that schools also sit within a wider community where there is that extra support. And also, teaching now is becoming more and more widely thought of as a master's level profession. So if you're really interested in carrying on, continuing your studies, or you're thinking of kind of returning to academia alongside training to be a teacher or going through teacher education, well, then there are routes for you. And there are routes into leadership, as Rian alluded to earlier on, that, you know, it might be that for you, actually, being a classroom teacher and everything that comes with it is enough. But you might also have aspirations to be a senior leader later on, to climb a little bit. And there are lots of different opportunities for you in that regard. It might be, as Rian mentioned earlier on, that you're really interested in the pastoral side of things. It might be that you're interested, if you're in the primary phase, in developing a particular subject specialism and becoming a bit of an expert at that in your school or an area of learning and experience. You know, there are lots of opportunities to progress in teaching, be it academically, be it moving up the leadership scale, or both. So, you know, lots to consider and lots to be offered. You know, there's not just about making a difference to young people, although that's probably going to be at the core of your why.
Yeah, so let's move on. Let's assume you're sold on this then. Teaching is a great profession. We've totally sold this to you. Now you're listening. I suppose now is the point to also look at the flip side and say, we've also pointed out that it demands a lot of you. It demands the right kind of person. It demands that you know what you're signing on the dotted line for. And I'm going to put my hand up at this point and say that I have a red line as someone who runs a program here, that I don't let people in if they don't know what they're signing on the dotted line for, you know, if for all of the reasons that we've just given. So it's probably only fair that if you've listened this far into the episode, we assume you're sold on it. We give you a few clues about the sort of things that you should be doing between now and turning up in an interview room with maybe one of us three, or maybe somebody else closer to where you are. So some things that you ought to do before you actually get that application in, and certainly before you turn up to interview?
Well, one of the questions, obviously, that you will be asked is your experiences to date, experiences relating to working with young people. So I would strongly suggest, if you haven't had any experiences since leaving school, or if you're currently in university, that you actually go into a school, that you ask for some experience working with young people, be it as a TA or actually supporting in an activity, be it a production in the summer term or wherever you're needed, really, so that you can see a school working on a day-to-day basis, and that you ask to shadow and you ask to go in maybe in the pastoral time in the morning, or be it during a certain lesson that you want to observe if you're looking on a certain subject field, that you want to see that in action with different groups, different pupils, different abilities, different age groups, so that you can see probably what teaching looks like in reality now compared to your experience when you were actually a pupil yourself in school.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what that will allow you to do at interview, and I'm sure that this is something that is looked for across the world when we're looking for teachers, is that they can make these connections between what they know about teaching and learning and what they're seeing happening in the classroom. They can draw upon those experiences in order to show that they can be quite critically reflective, because we know that critically reflective teachers are the ones who are going to be able to sort of unpick, well, what happened there in that lesson? What's going on with that pupil that I've been trying to sort of get through to, you know, that they're going to be able to be sort of autonomous in solving those problems. So it's those sort of personal qualities and skills that will come from you having been in, experiencing the classroom, and then being able to spotlight some of those experiences at interview.
And I suppose if you've managed to get yourself on the right side of the door, maybe through volunteering as a teaching assistant, maybe you're helping out with the production, maybe you're working as a peripatetic teacher if you're a musician, maybe you're getting some work experience as part of a university module or something like that, just ask yourself the question, I suppose, what do I need to do to make sure I know what it is to be a teacher, a classroom teacher? Because I suppose, taking an example close to my heart, if you're a peripatetic teacher, you could just be parked in a class, in a practice room, and three children coming in at a time who've all done their practice and got their instruments and taken their grade exams. And on the other side of the wall, there's an entirely different kind of teaching going on. So have you actually knocked on the door and gone in and seen that? If you are doing extracurricular coaching in PE or something like that, you're seeing the kids that want to stay behind and be in the football team, in the cricket team, in the hockey team, whatever. What happened during the day with the kids who have a really difficult relationship with sport and physical activity? How can you go and find that out? So just because you're in the building doesn't necessarily mean you've gone and sought out the right thing. So use your brain on that. Use your critical thinking, as Emma said, and go and find that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, particularly if you've been a TA, because you know, a TA's are worth their weight in gold, and it's a really useful first step into the teaching. And oftentimes, TAs will go on to train as fully qualified teachers.
Mm. Always find out how they like their tea. Top tip.
Always find that out, always. But I suppose, again, you're in a very different role in the classroom there. So you may have seen a lot of teaching, but actually what we know is this, it doesn't matter how you come at it, there is quite a lot of unlearning to be done in order to figure out what teaching and learning is all about and the sort of teacher that you want to be. So a classic example is that you might come in mimicking a teacher that you really revered. Maybe they were quite authoritarian. You come in too strong and it absolutely fails because you've missed out some really important steps that you know, you're here on the programme or whatever route you've taken to learn about. So you've got to have that sort of sense of self-awareness when you're preparing to go into teaching, that actually it's not as easy as it looks. And those who kind of come into it with those eyes wide open and, you know, being a bit humble about that process tend to set themselves in good stead when they do take a few knocks along the way.
Yeah. What about the primary secondary thing, Rhian? What do you think about people who don't know which one they like? It's a controversial one, isn't
it? Oh, I think we always say, don't we, I could never teach in the primary
setting.
Yes,
we all say to each other, don't
you
we?
You know, we couldn't cope with youngsters sort of, you know, grabbing onto our legs and sort of wanting our attention all the time, you know, and that's the type of, again, I suppose, Tom, it's quite stereotypical, isn't it, really? Because I'm thinking, when I left my last post in school, it had become an all-age school. So now there's more probably, isn't there, of transition between different phases, and especially with the new curriculum, secondary teachers are being asked to teach at the primary setting, especially if they've got specialist subjects. Quite often P and music are asked to go down to the primary school. It's a difficult one, isn't it, really? Because I think you tend to think of your own experiences because you wanted to be a subject specialist, didn't you, really? And you wanted to teach GCSE or A-level, I suppose. And I do think people have a calling to a certain phase. Myself, I still feel, when I go out now to observe students, teachers themselves, I think, yes, they're in the right setting, they're in the right phase, because I think you want to delve deeper into your one subject, don't you, really, where you're more of an expert in all, I suppose, aren't you, in the primary? And I do actually, I'm in awe of them because they have to, haven't they, upskill in all subject areas or areas of learning as it is now. And they have to be quite brave because they have to teach without the comfort zone probably that we do have in the secondary. The challenge is probably in the secondary that all of my primary friends tell me is, oh, discipline, isn't it, really, in behavioural management? How do you deal with rowdy 16-year-old boys kind of thing? And I think, for me, that suited me. So I think it's a very valiant point that you need to know what makes you tick and what makes you feel comfortable and where you think you will be best placed, but maybe to remember to... there's a new programme now, Welsh Government are funding. It's called the Pontio programme, where they're trying to encourage primary teachers to change phase. And apparently it's going very, very well. And they're glad that they've had... So really, they've had experiences of both phases, haven't they, really? So probably not as narrow a route as I took. So maybe, you know, there's no one fits all, maybe?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I always say... Number one, get in a classroom because you'll know within 30 seconds whether this is for you. But then I think if you are on the fence, you should probably go and look at both, because it's not just as simple as, well, those are young children and these are older children. You know, those are sweet little kids and those are bolshy teenagers or whatever the kind of the stereotype might be. There are compromises which you have to live with in either kind of age phase, don't you? I know we had a really interesting chat with David Egan about secondary and the problems there and primary and what they can do and what we can't do. But then equally, you know, there are problems with primary in terms of, as you said, having to cover all of those subjects and be brave and all of that. And do you want to really get to know 25, 30 children incredibly well over the course of a year? Or would you rather they all shipped back out of the door every hour and you get a new batch? You know, that kind of thing. There are so many angles that if you really haven't thought that one through, I think it's going to be quite hard to answer the questions at interview, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would agree. And we always recommend, you know, just trying to get in, having a look, looking at the differences, the different settings, the environment, the way that the teacher works with learners in those different environments. And that won't be time wasted because you'll already get a good sense of how, you know, primary pupils have, you know, a big jump to make, what challenges they might face transitioning from one phase to the other. So it's really going to help you settle things in your own mind. Something that might seem like a really basic bit of advice, but is incredibly important, is to do your homework. Do your homework on the course that you're applying to, but also more broadly, the education system. That doesn't mean to say that you need to know everything about the education system for the course that you're applying to, but we know in Wales that education is a devolved matter, and therefore things are quite different here in Wales to over the border in England, to up in Scotland, even in Northern Ireland. And we know we have international student teachers on the programme, applicants to our programmes, who again might have a bit of a shock to the system when they realise that things have slightly different names, there are different emphases placed on different things, the curriculum design might be a bit different. So it always bodes well, I think, when an applicant shows that they've gone a little bit further. They've done a bit more homework, and they're able to reference some of the things that are quite unique to that particular country or, you know, education system. So do your homework about the programme, about what you're letting yourself in for, about the setting that you want to go for, the phase you want to go for, but also about the education system more broadly.
Do you want to do a few quick fire things to not do at interview? Or things to do? You've done things to do. Maybe we should put it a bit more kindly, let you know reasons why we might feel you're not quite ready.
Oh gosh, this is a difficult one. It's a bit of a maybe a controversial one, but I suppose it does go down well, I think, if a candidate presents themselves well, and I don't just mean an appearance there. I mean they present themselves as somebody who has done their homework, is prepared, you know, has put time, thought and effort into being in front of you, even if that's on a screen, you know, and that they are a very credible sort of candidate that is there to make the most of the interview experience, actually, not time wasters.
We've got to be able to imagine you in a classroom, haven't we, really?
Yeah.
And I think you need to be convincing. You need to convince us that you really want to do this course, that you want to become a teacher, that you show the passion, the enthusiasm and the conviction that this is the course for you, that that you would make a good teacher. And as you say, probably you need to experiment and explore and think about the skill set that you have, because, you know, teaching is a tough gig. It's not an easy job, and that you do possess those attributes that you can share with us why you would be a promising and a flourishing teacher.
Yeah, because I suppose this is the moment to be really, really honest and say that, you know, if you do come on one of these courses, you're going to go into a school and you're going to teach classes, you're going to teach people's kids, and they don't get to have that hour back if you weren't really sure this is what you wanted to do. And so you didn't really plan it, and, you know, you're not really feeling it today. So you've sort of put a bit of a half-baked experience in. Unfortunately, we don't have a little kind of classrooms full of pretend AI generated children that you can sort of do that stuff with. And so this is why we have to know that you really do know what you're going for. It doesn't mean you can never have a bad lesson. It doesn't mean you can never have stuff go wrong. But if the reason is that you sort of just weren't really sure it was for you, that's a little bit of a no-no, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
How about another controversial one? I don't know quite how this one is going to land, but if we're pulling the curtain back again and saying that we've got real children there that you've got to teach, those guys in school that look after you, they don't really get paid for it. They don't get extra time off for it. They do it because they think it's the right thing to do to bring on the next generation, you know. And I was always very, very committed about that when I was a teacher, that I should take student teachers. But without wishing to say that we're not going to be very supportive, because we are very supportive, like all of our student feedback says we're very supportive, we do have to make sure that we're not going to absolutely monopolise every waking second of those school colleagues' lives. We do need to know that we're going to fit in as a student teacher, and we're going to take things and run with them. It doesn't mean we're never going to be supportive, but we can't sort of expect to be that person's everything, because of course their kids, their pupils are that to them, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, and I think, you know, the mentor that you would have within the school is somebody who is actually a key player in your progress out there in the school, and you become very, very close to them and you get to know them very well, and they invest a lot of time in you and in your progress. But it works both ways, as you say, Tom, doesn't it, really? And that you've got to show that you're willing to give back to that setting, be it extracurricularly or be it within that department or be it to them. When they ask you and set deadlines, that you're actually a professional and that you actually adhere to their deadlines, because they're extremely busy people and they have many plates spinning, haven't they, really, within a day context in school. So that you're actually quite flexible, I think that's quite important too.
Yeah, it's so important that people don't misinterpret what I've said. We've said in either of those things. We're not saying never have a bad lesson. We're not saying never lean on school colleagues for support, because that would be completely insane. Because as we've said, you know, the job is quite tough, you know, and you'll have bad days at the office. But There's a line there, isn't there? There's a line of professionalism there. And I suppose self-awareness is everything, isn't it, in learning to be a teacher. And you do just need to kind of make sure you're in that place where you're going to do that.
Yes, indeed. And actually, that is a nice segue to thinking about the routes, the different routes you can take into the teaching profession, because it might be that you're at a point in your life where a little bit of flexibility, part-time study might be exactly what you need right now, in which case the Open University has a part-time route into teaching here in Wales. We are mostly going to talk about routes into teaching in Wales because that's where we are here. But of course, there are other routes. There are lots of ways to become a teacher in other locations internationally, not least England, just over the border from us. So have a look at those and see which one is right for you. But it kind of comes back to Tom's point that, you know, what kind of person am I? What kind of learner am I? What am I going to be willing and able to do? I mean, if you're just fresh out of ASA level or equivalent post 16, and you know you're thinking of becoming a teacher, then a BA with QTS, here we offer BA primary with QTS, is a slightly different route into teaching in that you've got a bit more time and space to become that teacher. So you'll do it over 3 years, you'll have lots of university study, but you'll also get time on placements, much like we do in the PGCE, but it's not all happening in a 9-month period. So if you're thinking about a route into teaching that's quite quick and intensive, then a PGCE route into teaching is going to give you that hit, but it's going to be very full on. It's a 9-month program that is full time, that will, you know, really take up a lot of your time, and you'll be completing assignments at master's level, whereas on the BA you're doing a bachelor's degree. So there are different routes into teaching that you need to consider very carefully, but with that sort of self-awareness in mind. What kind of learner am I? What kind of environment am I going to thrive in as a learner, as I'm learning to teach? And we've got a brand newly minted program actually that's quite unique in the sort of audience that it's catering to. So perhaps, Rhian, you could tell us about the PGC route to QTS for school-based employees.
Yes, this, as you say, Emma, it's a brand new programme which will be starting this summer here in Cardiff Met. And this is for a certain niche of people, not for all. It's for these who have a degree but do not possess a QTS. So they're currently teaching in school and have been teaching in school maybe for a number of years, but they don't possess the QTS, so they're deemed to be unqualified. Because they're deemed to be unqualified, they are not privy then to the same wage or to pension status either. And quite often they teach classes in school, they assess the work, they go to parents' evenings, they do everything a normal teacher would do, but they don't have the QTS status. So it's a brand new programme, which will be a year-long programme, where they will have a graduated approach to teaching. They will be here on campus on certain days. They will then be privy to 3 weeks of an alternative setting to have an opportunity to delve deeper into the subject pedagogy. They will also have time off class, off their own timetable, to observe, to team teach, to have specific mentoring for them to be able then hopefully at the end of the year to claim and to attain this QTS. But as you mentioned earlier, they will also have to complete assignments on master's level, but it'll be a graduated approach where they will be relieved from their current timetable but still be employed in their own school.
So quite a specific little audience there, but really needed, yeah. I think, because there is a little sort of secret group of people who've ended up working in schools without qualified teacher status. And as you say, they're not accessing that teacher pay scale. So hopefully we can write that.
Well, hopefully we start with the Welsh medium this year, and then next summer it'll be open to the English and Welsh medium. So fingers crossed, we will attract quite a few applicants.
Now, the Educators Wales website is a good sort of one-stop shop if you're considering what route into teaching is going to be right for you. If you go to the Educators Wales website, you'll find out all about those things. And I think it's got a function where you can sort of filter your options and your preferences, and it will recommend the routes that might be right for you. So that's a bit of a top tip for those of you who want to take this further now, what you've heard from this episode. So I think that concludes our fresh new episode of So You Think You Want to Be a Teacher. We've got our usual short slots. Something to try, I think we've covered already, which is to try getting out into...
We've given you a lot of homework, actually,
haven't we? Yeah, so maybe try getting out into some schools. And as Tom mentioned earlier on, really start to kind of look a bit more critically at what you think teaching is based on your current experiences, even if that's just as a learner, versus what, you know, what you're seeing in the classroom, the sorts of learners and the range of learners that teachers are catering to in the classroom setting.
Yeah, and it's probably just worth kind of reiterating the fact we're talking about Wales here mostly because that's where we are. And there is very much a position here in Wales that university study is a part of learning to be a teacher. I've sort of mentioned it a couple of times in this episode that we're not training up performers, we're not training up deliverers. And so it, regardless really of whether you're coming onto the school-based employees one that Rian was talking about, you know, you're going to be in university or working, interacting with the university. If you've got a degree already, you're going to come and do a postgraduate qualification. If you don't have a degree, because as Emma says, maybe you're coming straight out of school, or maybe you didn't get a degree when you came out of school and you've had a glorious career doing something else and now you fancy coming into teaching, there's still a route for you. Rankles a bit that it's only available to primary. For me, I used to teach on a secondary undergrad and it was just wonderful. It was really good. And you took the undergrad route, didn't you?
I did. Secondary. And hopefully one day, you know, there's always change in education. Hopefully one day they'll bring it back. I think something else that I might, it's not a something to try, but I think it's just one more thing that we probably should have covered in this episode, which is that there is a real shortage of certain types of people in the teaching profession. Yeah. And that we aren't really a very representative or diverse workforce at present. So, and I'm, you know, I'm talking there about, you know, global majority people, but also people who perhaps have come from different backgrounds, diverse backgrounds, as we've mentioned, career changers, mature students, students who are parents and carers themselves. I always remember June Hercombe, a colleague who features on the podcast a few years ago, she did the original episode of this, saying that when she had her own children, it got her really interested in child development, and that was her stepping stone into teaching. So, you know, no matter who you are, you know, people can be what they can see. And so we really do need to work on that in the teaching profession, in making it a more representative and diverse workforce.
Yeah, even some pockets of the profession are quite short of men, even when we start thinking about young people and role models and things like that. And actually, Rian, thinking about your own specialism, we're dangerously short of Welsh speakers, aren't we?
We are. We are very dangerously. And I think, you know, it is quite a crisis, I would say.
And because it's getting more popular as a thing, isn't
it? It's getting more popular. We've got more Welsh medium schools opening, but we need to populate them with fantastic teachers, don't we, really? So that's our mission, isn't it, really, Tom? You know, we've got so many pockets that we need to tackle, and I think we need to overcome what's stopping people from applying.
Yeah, and sometimes we quite like it at interview, don't we? When we don't get the standard, I always wanted to be a teacher and I was a high flyer and I was this. Sometimes we get, I was the naughty kid and I bailed out of education early. Sometimes you get, I'm a pop musician, I'm a rock musician, you know, from my point of view. Sometimes you get, do you know what, I came from a really deprived background and my teachers just didn't click with me. So if you think you've got that secret something that might maybe help connect with a pupil who's not seeing people at the front of the room who are like them, maybe that's a reason to start doing your homework as well.
Indeed. And I suppose just to end on something interesting, this is a recommendation that we have made before, and we've actually got a whole episode that covers this as a book review, but particularly opening chapter of Beginning Teachers Learning, Making Experience Count by Byrne, Hagger and Mutton. It's quite a short book, but as I said, that opening chapter that gives some pen portraits of different types of student teacher and the different challenges that they've faced depending on what experiences they've had prior to embarking on becoming a teacher. So it might be quite eye-opening to some of you, to for some of you out there, to have a read of those pen portraits, because there is no one perfect type of applicant, type of person coming into teaching. There's enough space in teaching for all types of teacher.
They're reassuringly bumpy, aren't they, those rides that are described in those pen portraits. I mean, you get the sort of really, really perfect one at the beginning, but we very quickly move on to some people that really did have some bumps in the road. And I think I said it earlier in the episode, self-awareness is so important as a teacher and as someone who's learning to be a teacher. So it doesn't hurt, even if you haven't applied yet, to have a little read, see if you recognise a little bit of yourself in that. And bear in mind that, you know, if you do find bumps in the road, you might be lucky or unlucky enough to find one of us helping you along the way.
So thank you very much for listening. Rhian, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. And best of luck for the future.
Yes, hope to see you at interview soon. We'll be back in a fortnight. Bye for now. You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Emma O'Duher and Tom Breeze. Thanks to our colleague Rhian Wynne Griffiths for joining us in the studio. If you'd still like to become a teacher and you're anywhere near us, check out the Cardiff Met website for details of our initial teacher education programmes for undergraduates, postgraduates and school-based employees. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.